From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo may call a special session to deal with threatened funding cuts from Washington. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo touting New York's SAFE Act in light of the mass shooting in Las Vegas, and will talk to the new chancellor of the 64-campus SUNY system. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo says he may have to call a special session in December to deal with potential funding cuts from Washington that he calls part of a federal assault on New York. An update from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo says he's developing a plan to manage what he says will be over $1 billion in cuts to the state's public hospitals now that Congress has failed to renew a key program.
All hospitals will need to find savings, and local governments and state government will need to find ways to work with these hospitals to make ends meet.
Cuomo says he's engaged the financial firm KPMG to come up with a proposal to distribute the cuts, and he'll also reconvene his Medicaid redesign team. They revamped the Medicaid program several years ago. The legislature will then have a chance to vote on the cost-cutting plan under provisions of a new law passed as part of the state budget earlier this year. The governor admits the cuts will be controversial and difficult to allocate.
We'll come up with a proposal. We'll give it to the legislature. I'm sure it will be a heated argument, but that's where we are.
The cuts stem from the expiration of the Disproportionate Share Hospital Fund, or DSH. It provided money to public hospitals to help pay for care for the uninsured. It ran out on October 1st after Congress failed to renew it. The DSH fund is part of the Affordable Care Act. When the ACA began in 2010, President Obama and Congress intended to eventually phase out that money to help the uninsured because under the new national health plan, the numbers of uninsured were expected to drop. In New York, the number of uninsured has dropped by half. Critics have said Cuomo and state leaders should have known the cut was coming, and the governor acknowledges that he did anticipate that the DSH money would end someday.
You know, it's like anything else in life. They tell you stop eating hamburgers, you have high cholesterol, you're going to have a heart attack. I know, but I like hamburgers, you know, and I don't really believe it's going to happen to me. I don't think people believed it was ever going to happen.
Congress also failed to renew funding for the Child Health Plus program for poor children, a program originally begun by the present governor's father, the late Governor Mario Cuomo, and adopted nationwide by former President Bill Clinton. New York will lose $1 billion, but the governor's Medicaid director, Jason Helgerson, says the program will continue to provide health care for around 330,000 children, even though the federal component has now ended.
The first time in the history of this program, we do not actually have congressional authorization to operate the program. So that's, I think, what has everybody scared.
It's possible, though, that the cuts could be avoided. Cuomo says Congress could act in December to renew the DSH funding and other funds. New York Senator and Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer, along with House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi, cut a deal with President Trump to work out a new federal spending plan by mid-December. Cuomo says if that happens, the legislature won't need to meet until January and the cuts won't have to be made.
And frankly, I don't have a high level of confidence in Washington acting sensibly, period.
In the meantime, Cuomo says he'll appeal to the state's congressional delegation, both Democrats and Republicans, to fight to restore the cuts. The governor's plans to cope with federal cuts comes as the state's controller has issued a report. It finds New Yorkers give over $40 billion a year more in taxes to Washington than they get back in benefits. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, let's start with the news of the week, which is national news. It has to do with Las Vegas and, of course, the gunman who opened fire from the Mandalay Bay Casino, killing 58 people and injuring over 500. We're hearing now that the GOP in Washington are more receptive to a ban on the so-called bump stock that allows a semi-automatic weapon become an automatic weapon. And in New York, which has some of the toughest gun laws in the nation, if not the toughest, Governor Cuomo out criticizing Washington for their efforts or non-efforts and touting the SAFE Act as a national model.
Well, whatever his motives, and, you know, who knows whose motives are what, we do know that he did a heroic thing. He came out after the Sandy Hook massacre of those beautiful little children, and he proposed the SAFE Act. And then he used every bit of muscle he had to get the Senate to go along, and they did. And he got the Assembly, of course. And now we have a SAFE Act, and if you drive around upstate New York, all you see are signs saying repeal the SAFE Act. But he had the guts and the will to do it. You know why, David? Because it was right. It was right. This kind of thing can't be allowed to go on any longer. And yes, you are right. The Republicans in Washington are on the run. How do we know it? Two things. First is that Speaker Ryan all of a sudden says, well, this is not the time to bring up the, they're not going to bring up the Silencer Act, which will make it easier to have silencers on your guns. Or one of the defenders said, well, we're only doing that because it'll be better on our ears. Really? So anyway, that's one thing. The other is, as you've mentioned, this enhancement of guns to make them into machine guns is being regarded as, well, maybe it's time to get rid of that one, too. For $99, you can send away for that. Look, this is a horrendous thing. New Yorkers have always been where they should be on this. Maybe not everybody in upstate New York. But I tell you, I think there comes a tipping point when the NRA and the gun manufacturers really, despite all of the money, all the millions of dollars they give to politicians, I'm talking millions of dollars that they give to politicians, all that's been in the Times, you know that the American people at some point get fed up. I think that's happening. I think it's happening in New York.
Also this week, Alan, Governor Andrew Cuomo said, and we're just heard from our Karen DeWitt, that he may have to call a special session in December to deal with what is potential funding cuts from Washington that he calls part of a federal assault on New York.
Well, it's true. It is on New York. We know that the Trump tax plan said that the deduction of state and local taxes should not be allowed anymore. Apparently, the Republicans are on the run on that one, too. But when you talk about the high tax states like New York or California, or so many others that do provide for their citizens by taxing them. Let's face it, you don't get something for nothing. They do. There are southern states and other places that tax much less and give much less to their citizens. So now there's a big whammy on the whole thing. They come along and they say, let's make sure that New York and Massachusetts and California and Connecticut, you know, are punished. These are states that didn't vote for Trump. Well, now you can only imagine what the reaction is. Then along comes the federal government, and they start to take back health care benefits. Looks like the Child Health Plus program could go down. And these are terrible things that will cost millions and millions and millions of dollars around the country. But what's worse than costing the money is it'll ruin the health of the children and of people who have come to depend on it. And New York may have to make up an awful lot of that, which means, of course, that Trump is forcing New York to tax more. I don't think there's any question. You need the money, and one way or another, you're going to have to get it.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The U.S. Supreme Court began hearing arguments this week on whether partisan gerrymandering is constitutional. With this case in mind, Common Cause New York and other partners are urging communities to participate in a local census program to ensure hard-to-count communities are included. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more on a report on the dangers of undercounting in New York.
Accurate census data helps provide for fairer congressional, state, and local government legislative districts and to ensure the proper distribution of federal funding. Therefore, says Susan Lerner, undercounting in the 2020 census could mean many states and counties will be denied funding and proper representation. Lerner is executive director of Common Cause New York.
Fortunately, though, there's something that local governments can do about it. By participating in the U.S. Census Bureau's local update of census addresses, the LUCA program, to help ensure a fair and accurate, fair and complete 2020 census count.
Lerner says fewer than 25% of New York counties had signed up for LUCA at last check.
Counties, cities, towns, villages have until December 15th to sign up. And as of September 27, we only have 14 counties. So Steuben, Tioga, St. Lawrence, Cayuga, Clinton, Montgomery, Saratoga, Greene, back to the map, please, Greene and Ulster, plus the five counties in New York City, have signed up. But all of the others have not.
Plus, she says,
counties that didn't participate in LUCA in 2010 that have hard-to-count populations need some extra urging, and that's Erie, Niagara, Schenectady, Suffolk, and Westchester.
She says there is concern about ensuring hard-to-count communities such as immigrants and rural and low-income households are counted. Lerner says agricultural counties such as Delaware and Washington also should sign up for LUCA. Jeffrey Weiss is a redistricting expert and fellow at SUNY Buffalo Law School.
We've witnessed an undercount in New York State of over 200,000 people in the 2000 census. And when that relates to the numbers of a state Senate district having 315,000 people, or a state assembly district with 130,000 people on the average, or a congressional district of 717,000 people, everyone counts.
Weiss says New York could lose one, if not two, congressional districts after the 2020 census. Mark Levine is deputy director of the New York State Association of Counties and speaks to the Supreme Court case and LUCA efforts.
The outcome of this case is very important to ensure the integrity of the democratic process. It has come to our attention that New York State may have been undercounted in prior census counts. This is unacceptable for the people of this state. We need to be represented. New York is encouraging and working with all counties to sign on to the local updates for census addresses, the LUCA, to leave no stone unturned and that make sure that all people are properly accounted for in the 2020 census.
Lerner has another concern. She says that while the Census Bureau expects to have 55% of responses submitted online for the 2020 census, 5.4 million New Yorkers and 55,000 businesses do not have access to high-speed broadband internet service. Stephen Romaleski is director of CUNY Mapping Services at the Center for Urban Research at the Graduate Center. He developed an interactive mapping application that highlights hard-to-count tracts nationwide.
So the map enables anyone to zoom directly to their congressional district, again here in New York and anywhere in the country, and get a sense of how much of that district was hard to count in 2010, how much of it will likely be hard to count again in 2020, and understand the scope of the impact of a potential undercount for their district and why it's so important to have a fair and accurate count for 2020 and to fully fund the Census Bureau's effort.
A link to the site with the application is at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Dr. Christina Johnson is in her first weeks as the 13th chancellor of the 64-campus SUNY system. Johnson, an engineer, is the founder of a hydroelectric company. She served as the U.S. Undersecretary of Energy in the Obama administration. She also has been provost and senior vice president for academic affairs at Johns Hopkins University, dean of engineering at Duke University's Pratt School of Engineering, and a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder. She holds more than 100 patents and was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame in 2015. During a recent visit to Clinton Community College, Dr. Johnson told the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley why she's staying in academia as SUNY chancellor.
I've been an entrepreneur, I've been a faculty member, and I've served in government, and each of those were very distinctive opportunities that I really enjoyed. I think at the end of the day, the legacy I'd like to leave is really in the education and bringing together the partnerships and collaborations between the entrepreneurial community and the educational community. Particularly the reason I like SUNY is because, as we all know, there's a SUNY school within, 95% of the residents of New York City within 30 miles. So as we look at these communities and see how we can better communities, you have that vehicle out in the community in order to work through, and I think that's pretty exciting.
What are some of the biggest challenges you see in the SUNY system?
Well, I see one big challenge, and that is with this enormous opportunity in the distributed network of SUNY schools is making sure that we make the most of that.
How? What do you mean exactly by that?
I think that all the ways that our universities and colleges serve the communities is, I think my role is to elevate that to the next level. It's been very successful over the last 50, 60 years. Now the question is, you know, how do we make that even better? And that's my vision to do, is to make those opportunities better. And so that's what stresses me. I have to say, you know, it's like, wow, we have to even do better now, you know, and that's tough. That's a challenge.
Well, we're here at Clinton Community College with the Institute of Advanced Manufacturing. Does this campus have different challenges than, say, the University of Buffalo would have, or SUNY Geneseo, or UAlbany? Does each campus have unique challenges that you also have to mesh in with the overall challenges?
Oh, absolutely. And as you may know, SUNY has four or five different sectors. So we have the university-wide sector and the research doctoral sector. We have the comprehensive colleges. We have the community colleges. We have the technical sector. So each of those, I think, have more common in some ways opportunities and challenges. I think at the same time, what we see here in Clinton County and Plattsburgh is how the community colleges and comprehensives work together and to partner not only within SUNY but across SUNY with Clarkson to make the IM, you know, the IAM happen. That makes it easy. So that kind of reduces the stress of the job because they're all doing it. So I just have to copy that and see if there's other areas we can port that to, right? So I kind of view my job as a connector.
I was going to ask if you think things like the IAM here at Plattsburgh can be translated effectively elsewhere in New York.
Sure. So I think what was really interesting that the council did and the town council and community leaders, they got together maybe a decade ago. And they looked at what in this region could we do. And I think that's part of what the so-called Blue Ocean Strategy. You look locally at what the resources are. You see, okay, we can be great in manufacturing, transportation, aerospace. So now let's become that cluster to bring in the ecosystem. So you see that happening, for example, in Buffalo with the medical center and the health center. You see that happening in some of the other areas in their own distinctive areas that they identify. But some of the fundamentals are the same. How you get that done, how you work town and gown and across the different sectors, those strategies at a meta level are the same. It's just that the actual implementation can be different and distinctive to that region.
Going back to like the overall SUNY system, you not only have to deal with what's happening within New York State, but you're also influenced by national policies. Sure. We've heard a lot about DACA lately. Right. You issued a statement on that. How do we move forward regarding DACA?
Well, on all the issues that confront higher education with regard to whether it's DACA, whether it's Title IX, all these issues, you know, we set our compass in a certain direction and we maintain the course.
Can you, considering all of the uncertainties that come out of D.C.?
Oh, absolutely.
How?
Just maintain the course. Stay the course. Stay firm. Stay strong.
Have you?
That's why I call it SUNY Strong, you know.
How many of the 64 SUNY campuses have you been able to visit so far?
I'm probably around a dozen in that area. I try to align the what I want to accomplish in the vision and the opportunity to support what the local university leaders' vision and what they would like to get support. And so as those opportunities come together, that's how we're sort of plotting out how I get out to visit. And so this was a natural to be here.
You very briefly mentioned your vision during your speech. Can you talk about it for our listeners?
Yeah, maybe I have visions. Hopefully they're, you know. But I think the one area is how do we take the largest comprehensive university system in the country and create streamlined opportunities that we can connect the students in our high schools and junior high schools with the SUNY system in a way that makes it smooth and efficient and guides them to their ultimate career opportunity. So it's really a continuum. And we're doing that already. You know, we have the guided pathways that are pioneered by Monroe Community College. We have, Quantway, Statway, Quantway, another way of creating opportunities in the STEM areas. So there's an awful lot of the pieces that could put together that vision of lifelong learning. And so, again, it's a connector. So that's sort of one vision. The other one I mentioned in the talk was the ability to look for opportunities where different schools and universities are doing something unique, like here at the Institute for Advanced Manufacturing. Understand it, study, and see where it could be spread to other SUNY campuses. And it's not one size fits all, so it may not work at every place, but there's an awful lot of yeast here that could grow in other bakeries. And maybe I should end with those corny analogies.
Dr. Johnson's annual salary as SUNY Chancellor is $560,000.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1740. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.